You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Danielle Adair. She's an artist in LA. Danielle, thanks for talking with me today.
Thanks for having me, Brainerd.
So Danielle, let's begin with, there's a number of projects I'd like to talk about with you, but I know we'll probably get to all of them by just talking about what you're working on now. So can you tell me a little bit about what is happening in your studio now and what you're working on?
Sure. So currently I have kind of two major projects underway. One of them is a book project, and it's non-narrative, and that encompasses work that I've done beginning as far back as 8 years ago to the present day, and so it kind of tracks the trajectory of a number of my projects. And so that's strictly writing and dealing with my own archives, but the other project that I have going on is currently like the third tier of a project I've been working on for 2 years called Caution Bomb. And Caution Bomb takes up the Homeland Security slogan of see something, say something, which of course we all know, it's everywhere. And it began, the first tier of it began, I was a resident at Akademie Schloss Solitude in Stuttgart, Germany in 2012, 2013. And out of that experience, I was invited by the Musikhochschule, the State University of Performing and Music Arts, to produce a work for them. And so I created an opera, though I have no formal music training. And it was staged there in the summer of 2014. That opera was called Caution Baum, Baum being tree in German. And it still took up that phrase, see something, say something, dealing more with the politics of Stuttgart at the time. And then I've done the second tier, which is kind of based in LA, where I'm talking to you from. That's where I'm based. So its locus is Los Angeles. It's called Caution Palm, like the palm tree. And it is video and painting work. And the third tier that I just mentioned, which is what I'm underway on right now, and it's the final piece. It's called Caution Bomb, which is the entire project as a whole. And it's based on my time at both U.S. presidential conventions this past July in Cleveland and Philadelphia, and my application procedures to go there, and just kind of what I saw when I was there. So in that sense, see something, say something is about more directly like political agency and how we understand protest today. So that's one thing, more focused for performance and gallery work. And then, as I said, I'm working on this larger book project, which will take that work into account as well as past works of mine.
So there's the opera and this, and then this book that's going to take a lot into account in the opera. I mean, I'd like to talk about both of those things. In the opera, you said you're talking about, you know, a variety of government issues. Can you speak a little bit about that, about how you address those issues, and does that have anything to do with the time that you spent with U.S. forces in Afghanistan? Which, if not, then we can talk about that as it relates to the book. But I'm interested in your relationship to kind of U.S. politics, U.S. military, and does the opera talk about that specifically?
Well, the work that was done in Stuttgart itself, that was staged in Stuttgart, would be more abstractly based on U.S. politics, only in the sense that phrasing reoccurs. In the words of the performers, there were six vocalists and three instrumentalists in that particular stage iteration of the work. But in terms of, I think best way to answer your question or initially is to say that all my work takes up performance as a kind of methodology in terms of producing an outcome. And so in that sense, I myself take on particular roles in order to understand different institutions or locations or scenarios. And in a sense, my work with the opera was this kind of unusual invitation to be a composer-director of an opera piece. And it was, in fact, like an artist intervention into this world of opera that's quite staunchly, it's firmly embedded in the South Germany and the traditions of music there. And so,
let me just ask you something. You said inventation. I don't know if you meant to say that you had an invitation, but it's.
Oh, I did.
But did you mean to use that
to
word?
You know,
but invitation. That sounds like an interesting word. That sort of is between an invitation and you doing an intervention. I know that was just a slip, but that's partly what it sounds like it's happening, because you're in a context that. I think, as you're beginning to say, is a very sort of formal one in a way, opera, you know, and yet
right.
you're obviously coming at it as an artist, not as an opera director.
Right. Thank you for pointing that out. That was a slippage, but hey, that's a great invention. yeah, that's exactly what it is, and in a sense, like it's an embedding in a way, which is. To connect to what you brought up earlier, that was my role, in fact, with the U.S. military. In 2008, I was a media embed, approved by the State Department to go over and spend time as media, as a journalist, with the troops in Afghanistan. And in that role, of course, I was doing an artist intervention. And so I looked at how we understand the situation there. Well, at that time, that was 2008, and just the different modes through which information is brought to the public here via media outlets.
When you became embedded, as you're saying, as a media with the troops, you're there as a journalist, but is that just what you called it, or were you actually writing for somewhere, or was it your own project in the guise of being a journalist? Because it's perhaps hard to explain to the military exactly what you are doing.
Well, it's both, and that would be kind of the heart of it for kind of my performance philosophy or performance aesthetic. Which is, I do want to successfully execute the role that I have taken on, but it is from a more artistic perspective, and in terms of how I've been educated and how I operate in the world, it is all part of my art. So when I was there, I'm saying the word journalist. I can use air quotes when I speak to someone in person, but. In fact, I was a journalist. I applied through the State Department. I, to this day, do not know, in fact, whether or not this became clear to them or whether or not it became important after a certain amount of time. But my news agency was the Los Angeles-based press, Le Figue, which is a publisher of experimental literature, poetry, prose, translation. Whom I've worked with in the past. And so I used Le Figue as my byline, so to speak. And after going there, I did produce a publication through Le Figue. So, in fact, I did have an art output, a journalistic output, so to speak, from my time there, which can, you know, were the department to follow up with me, I have something in that sense. And in terms of the opera as well, the audience for it were people from the community that appreciate worked for stage in music and in operatic forms, and the people that I worked with were schooled in that context as well. So in a sense, I was a composer and director. I did pull that off. So, but yet it's part of the artistic outgrowth of, you know, my, it's part of my art, my art practice too.
And when you were there, you're, right? No, it's not. I mean, I'll help unconvolute it if I think it is, but I think that's clear. So when you were there, you're writing about this, but obviously from a way that's, you know, unlike the way most journalists are approaching it. How did it feel to be just in the context of that? Because it's kind of like an artist entering an arena where artists often aren't, and you're a journalist approaching it from such a different direction, and now these elements may be incorporated, if I understand correctly, in your experience there into the opera and your book. So what was it like there to be the type of journalist you were? I mean, if you want, you can tell an anecdote from there. I'm also just wondering about how it felt to be in the context of other journalists, or did you not really have conversations about that there? They just assumed you're a journalist and everybody left you alone.
Yeah, all good questions. I think it's helpful to state that I was with a specific unit that I had met in training. So there's a base outside of Los Angeles, Fort Irwin, California, which is in the desert. And in 2008, and to this day too, it gets dressed to look like the terrain of the places that units are going to deploy to. And in that way, the base hires local people to perform. In my case, it was dressed to look like villages of Afghanistan, so it hires Afghan Americans to perform on base, or it hires people to perform like media, so that the soldiers there get a kind of simulated experience before they deploy to the actual location. And I had a kind of fluke invitation to go there, and I did, and January of 2008, and I was on base in Fort Irwin, so not far from, you know, my home, Los Angeles. I was on base for literally 2 days. It was very short, but I was assigned to a soldier who was a second lieutenant at the time, and she was in charge of intelligence for her specific unit. And we are the same age, it looked somewhat similar, and this particular soldier and I became friends in a really short amount of time, and we stayed in communication. And that spring, overhearing the news about Afghanistan, I thought, well, geez, I should just try to follow Kelly while she goes abroad. And so that led to my application procedure and trying to figure out how I could actually go over there as an accredited journalist, which I did get approved to do. And I went over and visited in November of that year. So I'd already met the unit in training that I reconnected with when I was in Afghanistan. So some of those people knew that I was, specifically the lieutenant I was following. She knew that I wasn't your typical journalist, so to speak, but none of that quite mattered when I was on base. I was based in Jalalabad, Afghanistan, in eastern Afghanistan. None of that really came up, not in any of the discussions I had, and I met many different people of different rank in the military. It really just was never a question that I had to answer. More or less, the unit that I reconnected with had already been stationed there for 6 months when I went. And I think I kind of became more of a confidant, in the sense I became someone's sister or, you know, good friend or relative, you know, someone that could listen and talk and just be a face of from afar for them. And even with the public affairs officers that I had to deal with more directly in terms of my accreditation and the paperwork, again, it didn't really come up. So, you know, it was, um, it was, it, it was more or less just kind of getting to learn about people's experience in a way that I had never before, because I don't have any, at that time, I didn't have any close friends or family that are in the military. In terms
was
of
that scary?
Meeting other
I mean,
journalists.
I mean, tell me about meeting other journalists or just in the environment there. I would imagine that sounds scary to me. I would imagine going there feels like you're taking a risk and that there's a kind of, I mean, that's just my projection of, or imagining about it, but that there's an element of fear surrounding, you know, your safety there or what could happen next.
Well, for sure, and especially since I, you know, I wasn't coming from CNN that, you know, had, you know, embed training in advance, knew exactly what perhaps immunizations I should have or how I should pack or what the weather conditions should be like. It was really hit or miss. And what I found through the whole experience is that, like, you tell one person that you're going to go, they know somebody that has some connection there, and they tell you, or they tell that person and kind of hand you off. And so I kind of collected information through my network in a kind of really organic way. And it was, you know, when you stand back from the situation, yeah, it is taking a risk, but I think there was a certain degree of just wanting to see firsthand, because that's how I, you know, I am fundamentally a visual person. That's how I kind of experience the world. In terms of meeting other journalists, the week before I arrived in Bagram, which is the main base there, and then you kind of go from there to your different outposts, Christiane Ampour had been on base, and I slept in the same, you know, room that she had slept in. And of course, I didn't talk to her, but she was there before me. I met, there's journalists from all over. I befriended two journalists that were there doing reports on just helicopters because they write for a helicopter magazine. Journalists span the scope from what we understand
and
that
sounds kind of amazing. So from that experience there, and to talk about the opera a little bit, even though that's in process, how will that be incorporated into the opera, or what are some of the themes of the opera regarding, you know,
right,
military or U.S. interventions, if that's
well, I should clarify that the experience in Afghanistan is one discrete project called First Assignment. I call it First Assignment, and it's been an umbrella project from 2008 of my performances, video performances, and in fact, the artist book from J. Bad Lessons Learned, which was published through Layfield Press and was my output, so to speak, my artist's field guide from that experience in Jalalabad. But it's not a book of prose. It's a collection of words and terminology and phrasings, and it's an artist book. My opera is a different project. It's called Caution Bomb, and that is connected in the sense that it is still the kind of embed performance philosophy. So I'm working on that.
Just to be clear about the embed performance philosophy, what does that exactly mean to you again?
It means taking on specific roles or persona and inserting myself in places to learn about different forms and institutions. And
right, so
that's
so similar
kind of
to the stories we were just talking about, right?
Yeah.
Right.
But that said, you know, I hope to always produce a product that can meet the aims of that particular realm in which I'm working. And in this case, it's an opera. But in addition to that, is this book project, which will combine all. And that is, will be prose. And so that will be like what we're doing right now. I'll be talking about my various experiences in these kind of embed positions.
And the opera, when will that take place and how will that take shape?
Yeah, so the first iteration already took place in Stuttgart. And the third version, which is my time of, in the conventions, that will be more or less a presentation performance, the kind of slideshow talk. And that I'm still lining up the performance dates for. I'm still in the work of creating it since it is utilizing all the documentation and kind of research I did this July at both conventions.
And the book, when will that come out, or how is the progress of that coming along?
That's going along well. I can't give you a release date right now, but that is something that I hope when I do release it that I will show in full the documentation. This feature or first assignment, this Afghanistan project, became a feature-length video work based on all these umbrella pieces or pieces of the umbrella that I've put together. I have not yet premiered that ever, and I have not premiered the opera in full. So hopefully at the time of the book release, I will show all. So I'm looking forward to kind of like an unveiling, so to speak.
And so the opera then, when it's complete, you're saying, it sounds like from what you just said, that new additions to it could be put together so that a new iteration of the opera will happen that's longer and is kind of part one and two, or no?
Yeah, part one, two, and three, yeah.
That sounds
so
very operatic and incredibly ambitious. I mean, you know, it's kind of like, you know, sounds like building a cathedral or something to me. Is the opera and this kind of ambition to do all these parts, I mean, kind of hard to manage? It sounds like a really oversized project to me.
It sounds so. It really, I'm a one-man band, though, in terms with the opera in Stuttgart. I mean, that's not fair. I had a whole team. We worked together to produce the stage piece. It was well-received, and performers did an excellent job. But in terms of the building and the conceptualizing of these projects, it might sound more complex than what it is. And, you know, it's I tend to operate kind of a combination of what doors open for me and what I can make with what I find myself, or where I find myself at the time. The way I got to Afghanistan is a perfect example of that. You know, I just kind of fluke was invited to the desert, and then through that I had a friendship, and through that, you know, I just tried to see if I could go there as a journalist, which I did. And, you know, I even followed the same unit when they redeployed back to Fort Hood, Texas. You know, you just kind of follow the avenues that you know, and it seems to me from my, the scope of these works is about 8 years, 2008 to now. And nothing is so concretely planned in advance. It seems that I work in a way that is, possibilities arise because of how I find myself.
Yeah, it's very, very interesting. And so then let me just ask finally, how is that, if you don't mind talking about this, how is something like that financed and produced? And the opera also sounds like something very expensive. And I mean, I know you're producing these in Europe as well, but is that something that you also easily find support for?
Well, I've been lucky to receive grants in the past and to have a number of artist residencies. And through those experiences, I've either been closer to where I need to go or I've been financed. The opera, in fact, was an invitation that came out of having done a residency in Stuttgart, and it was financed, so it was a very low budget, but, you know, that was not, that was never really an issue in terms of the staging for me. It was quite minimal set design and what have you. So you kind of make do with what you have, and I've been fortunate to receive funding through different grants, and as one sees fit, and also, of course, a credit card when it came to Afghanistan, but I also undertook, that was before crowdfunding became kind of the thing that it is today. In fact, I think a lot of the sites that we know of weren't in existence then, and so I did do my own funding campaign. And when I returned from Afghanistan, everyone that funded my going there, and I mean, that included, you know, buying body armor, because I needed body armor to be be okay to actually enter the bases and things like this. Everyone that donated to the project received an artwork.
Right, that was very early crowdfunding, before crowdfunding. Yeah, I would certainly contribute to your body armor. That sounds like a great cause, you know, while an artist there. It's great talking to you, Danielle. And I also want to ask you what books you're reading now, which I tend to ask people at the end of the interview, if you don't mind. It could be off topic or not, but just curious about what you are reading.
Oh, no problem. It's interesting. You're catching me at a time. I normally, you know, read one or two books at a time, but I have like seven open at the moment. Looking at my bookshelf now, it's because I did this whole experience at the conventions, which was its own application project and process rather, and embed of sorts. I've been looking at literature about campaign literature. So I have not yet finished, though it's open on my bookshelf. One of the key ones I'm sure every journalist that covers a campaign has read, Fear and Loathing on the Campaign Trail by Hunter S. Thompson. And then I had just read Leap Year by Steve Erickson about the 1988 campaign. But I also have, like, I just received Three Penny Opera by Brecht, because that's his quote-unquote play with music. And so I'm kind of interested to see, you know, just the text as it is on the page. I'm reading Voices from Chernobyl by Svetlana Alekseyevich, because she's the one that she won the Nobel, I think, last year. But I'm interested in how she incorporates these interviews that she's had and condenses them into monologues throughout the book. So what I'm reading right now is either campaign literature or books on how one puts interview logic into prose form.
Well, thanks for sharing that with me. It's always so interesting to hear what people are reading. And I want to thank you again for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure hearing about your work, and I wish you great success on the continued iterations of the opera and the book.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for the invitation.
Yeah, invitation. Yeah, I think that's what it was.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.